You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, FM 100.7, and we're also heard on the World Wide Web. What a fun day this is going to be. I can feel it in my old bones.
Yes, it is. Welcome to June 1st.
Right. Again, Sita Begee. I am the host of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and my very good friend Ellen Little, and my co-host is here. Ellen, thank you for being here again.
It's wonderful.
For showing up.
You do such 9 years. Job. I know.
Like I was telling Paul, 9 years. I hope you don't never get burned out.
Never.
Okay, good. That's good to hear, Paul, right? That's wonderful to hear. And we're going to have a really wonderful show today. A very informative, unscripted, educational, of course. And you know what? We speak from the heart. We speak about issues that are affecting our community, our world, the United States, and human beings who are here just to live and breathe. And we will talk about the word breathe in a little bit. We have Randy Foster, who is here, and he is a candidate who is running for Palm Bay City Council seat 3. And Randy is going to be chatting with us on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends in the second segment. So welcome again.
Thank you, Sita.
Thank you for taking the time to be here.
Yes, anytime.
You have been a supporter of Sita and Friends for a very long time, and we love when you come on. We always learn from you because you're so calm, so zen.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. You could see why he was in law enforcement. He would not be a law enforcement officer who's doing something terrible to people, Ellen. He would not, because he would think.
That's right.
Especially 8 minutes. You would think about that, wouldn't you?
Oh, yes, I would. 8 minutes is a long time.
8 minutes a long time to have your knee in somebody's neck.
Yes.
I mean, at the first time a person says, I can't breathe, get that knee up.
Well, there's so many things wrong with what happened.
Yes, it is.
There's so many things.
You know what type of business I have, and I deal with that on a basis. So, I actually seen things worse than that. So, but death is, you can't get no worse than death. I'm not trying to make light of what happened, but I actually seen things more horrific.
Well, you know, I just say all of us as human beings, it doesn't matter, you know, what we do for a living, whether you're a janitor, a nurse, a physician, a police officer, you're cleaning somebody's house, do it with pride and use proper judgment. Conduct yourself in such that you respect people and you respect their property, you know. We should not be here in 2020. This is not normal to still see people being judged by the color of their skin, is it?
You're right.
It's not normal.
It's not normal, but that's the situation we're in.
You know, so, I mean, I heard on CNN this morning, a gentleman said that racism is more deadly than COVID-19. So now that explains why so many people took to the streets to protest what happened to George Floyd. Because to them, waking up in the skin color that the good Lord made them, to them is more dangerous than a virus. And that's pretty deep, isn't it?
Yeah, and very scary too.
It is. And so as a person of color myself, and Randy is an African-American, and Ellen, you're white, and Paul's white, we all have stories to tell. But I always tell my friends and my family, there's only a few ways that we learn in life. We learn from an academic education, We learn from life experience. We learn from each other, and we learn from watching. I mean, the wisdom and the knowledge bestowed upon us by people who are older than us and wiser than us, it's up to us to listen.
And there's also some people that are still setting a bad example, and we can listen to that too and know that we shouldn't be setting that bad example.
Right. Well, you know what? You can protest, but you don't have to be violent.
That's right.
I disagree with anyone who torched a building or hurt someone or, you know, disobeyed the law. The law is there to protect and serve, but when the law doesn't do that, I understand, Randy. And we and I talked about that.
Yes, yes. You know, like I was telling Ellen, I was on the other side. I was the law enforcement officer that was protecting property when I was a U.S. Marshal in Washington, D.C. So it's not fun to have someone throw bottles and urine and Molotov cocktails at you when you're doing your job. So I know how the police officers feel. And you don't want to hurt no one, but you have to protect yourself and you have to do your job. They're in a tough spot. And that them officers, men and women of law enforcement, doesn't deserve what's being done to them right now.
Right. Well, you know, it's like, violence is not the answer. And I had a lot of people that private messaged me and said, you should not be saying that right now because you should be understanding the manifestation of the angry people. Well, guess what? I have always been a person that has said, you know, we stand by in solidarity with those who protest, but violence against a child, violence against a woman, violence against a community, sheesh, we went to Washington, D.C. to protest against unnecessary wars because we believe that violence against a country even is not the way to go. It's not the answer, right? I mean, we went to protest when we thought immigration reform needed to take place and it wasn't taking place. We protested for children in those cages because we thought that was wrong. So a lot of us do stand in solidarity with those who are protesting, but we don't believe in violence. And that's what you were saying as well.
Well, that's where the message gets lost, is because as soon as there's violence, then the message gets lost because now everybody's targeting the violence. Everybody's talking about the violence rather than the meaning.
I just want to make a quick point that there's always agitators among the protests. And even back in the 90s, in the early 2000s when I was out there, you have these groups integrate themselves with young people, don't really know any better, that they're being manipulated by these radical groups, okay? And they come in all across the spectrum.
All sizes, colors, and shapes. Well, right. I know we have our guest on the phone, and Randy Foster, who's running for Palm Bay City Council Group 3, thank you for your input with that. So we're going to go right to our phone, too. We've got a friend who is also a friend of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, Andres Useshi. He's an award-winning Colombian-American writer, Ellen, film director, graphic artist, a singer, a songwriter, and activist. And we have talked with him in the past about immigration reform and so many other things.
And he wrote a beautiful song.
He sure did. And I think today we're going to talk to him a little bit about justice and injustice and what's happening with the coronavirus. You know, we have to update our audience. We're not hearing much about that. So, Andres, you're on the phone. So thank you for taking the time for calling in. Actually, he's calling in from Southern California, not L.A. So thank you for calling in.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was a little delay there. I wasn't sure you were still on. So we were just trying to keep the mics going and talk a little bit about what's going on in our nation, about the death of this gentleman, George Floyd, at the knee of a police officer. Of course, some people are saying it's because he had pre-existing conditions, and I understand that. But we were just saying that once someone says, "I can't breathe," that we thought the gentleman should have taken his knee off. So talk to us a little bit about what's happening in Southern California and your thoughts on this situation.
Well, first of all, let me start by saying that what happened to George Floyd should have never happened. It's an obvious murder recorded on video. It's unjustifiable no matter what conditions. A person is supposed to be arrested, to be tried by a jury, and not executed by the police. in such a humiliating, inhumane way. There's no justification, and as authorities have said already, it's not only about the one corrupt police officer with his knee on his neck that needs to be tried. The other police officers that were there are complicit in their inaction and in what they did, allowing this to happen. So that is the focus that we should all have. That justifies all the peaceful protests that we should applaud and participate in, keeping safe distance and remembering that we're in a pandemic, global pandemic. And then we cannot for a minute not be open and close ourselves to the reality that we need systemic change. This is something that has been happening too often for too long, and the African American community and their allies, all of us who believe in justice and equality, have been clamoring for change in many different ways, and that hasn't been heard. When it's Colin Kaepernick protesting, you know, taking a knee, that has been attacked and frowned upon, and he ended up being fired and got so much backlash. And people just don't want a change in the status quo. Those who profit from injustice are way too comfortable in letting this thing, this injustice, keep happening. So I am a pacifist. I don't believe in violence. Violence detracts from the aim, from the actual change that we need to achieve. I know there are people who are being opportunistic about this. I know that the president, or so-called president, Mr. Trump himself, has been inciting violence in his tweets. I know that Jerry Reed from MSNBC has pointed out that, and many people have documented through video, many white supremacist groups have joined the protest.
Yes, we were just saying that, but you know, violence. Andres, we were just saying, you know, from day one when Mr. Floyd died, yes. I personally, as an American and as a human being, I would have preferred to see President Trump at that point become a comforter in chief, a healer in chief, and say to the American people, I feel your pain, that this is not an African-American problem. This is an American problem. And I don't understand how someone, the leader of the free world, did not go on national TV and at that time put himself in the place of a man who was just killed in front of all of us, because all of us were traumatized. And we have a constitutional right to seek justice for Mr. Floyd and all of us who watched that play out. So don't you feel like at some point politics should be set aside and he should just rise up to the occasion and show true leadership skills and say, I am sorry that this happened?
You know, that would be ideal. That would be fantastic if he actually had it in him. But we have seen him talking about and describing peaceful protesters as thugs and applauding, you know, the good people in white supremacist marches. We've seen not a shred of empathy from this man. So I believe that is wishful thinking. Sure, somebody could script something and put it on a teleprompter for him. But in everything he has ever said, if you studied it, there's nothing but divisiveness and bigotry.
Yeah, it doesn't come from the heart. It has to come from the heart. So we're all saying that in order to cure systemic racism, we have to have systemic changes. So tell us some of the ways that you think we could bring about the systemic change that we want to see economically, politically, and socially.
I myself am a protester. I'm a firm believer in peaceful protest, and I don't want to diminish the huge moment and the movement that can arise from it. But it has to be allied with actual governmental efforts, with actual policy. And that doesn't happen without elections. So we want us all to participate and not cede that power and not move away from government. We are lucky enough to still have a democracy, and we must participate in it. And that doesn't mean just electing the president, but making sure that we have a Senate and a House that are going to respond to what we need. You know, the Congress are the ones who legislate. They dictate the laws that are going to affect the our public and us as a people. Also, mayors are very important. They get to pick the police chiefs, which make a big difference. If you saw in Katman, in Fargo, in many different places where the police actually defended, you know, and stood by protesters. This happened also as while a lot of police were being extremely brutal around the country, there are police forces who have behaved exemplary. And that's what we need more of. And once people get engaged and put those folks as examples of what we want throughout the country, people who actually serve and protect instead of threaten and brutalize folks, we can achieve that. But we have to do it pushing from the grassroots with demonstrations, but also being smart about who we put in power.
Well, I'm glad you said all elections are local as well as state and congressional, because in studio with us, we have a former law enforcement officer. We have Randy Foster with us, and he is running for Palm Bay City Council Group 3. And I know Randy wanted to jump in here and put his input about being on the other end of protest. So Randy, go ahead. You could jump in here.
Yeah, I just wanted, you know, I agree with the gentleman. Everything that what he said, it starts with leadership. It starts with leadership from the mayor. I'm talking about local police departments and even state and federal. It starts from leadership, and it goes to the police chief. And if you don't have that type of leadership to control or get rid of these bad officers, this guy who put his knee on George Floyd's neck, I don't want to even say his name, he should have been fired a long time ago.
18 times he had violations.
But I keep saying this, I'm a expert, law enforcement expert, witness, consultant, and I keep telling people, police cannot police itself. When one department, every police department has is the internal affairs. Why is that? You know, you have internal affairs, but they do not do the job to clean the bad officers. I was telling a friend of mine, me and him was officers together on a police force back in the 80s. He was surprised. I said, you got four types of police officers. You got the wannabe cop. You got the cowboy. You got the Hollywood cop. And you got the racist. And then you got the good cop. But them four that I named needs to leave law enforcement. Because in any profession, you have good doctors and bad doctors. You have good nurse and bad nurse. You have good teachers and bad teachers. They shouldn't be in that profession. They need to leave.
Right. And that is so true. So Andres, so what happens when a racist police officer or a racist nurse or a doctor takes off the uniform? What happens to people when they are off duty? They bring their whatever is in their mind to their job at times, I think. So what do you think happened in this case where this person acted this way in the uniform, but we are all seeing that outside of uniform, people are still acting up. So how, charging forward, going forward, how do we tell those people that once you take off the uniform of a nurse or a doctor or a police officer or whatever, that this is how you should behave? Give us a path forward. Well, how do you feel about this path that we have to have?
I think that leadership is extremely important. Because we look up to our leaders for example and to set the tone, and that's true in high schools, you know, from a principal. It's true in a town with a mayor. It's true in the state, and it's true in the country. And I feel that our so-called president right now is doing anything but set the right example and the right tone for the country. I think he's empowering people at all levels. He called for police to get tougher while they were some of them were brutalizing protesters who were behaving appropriately and peacefully. He he has made threats that harken back to the 60s of shooting American civilians. This is a person that's completely out of control and way beyond anything he's capable of. And it's extremely dangerous that we're facing a global pandemic and this civil unrest and righteous anger, you know, at a time when we need to come together, unite, and look for progress and stand by the true ideals of this country of equality and justice for all. That's what we're talking about. We need somebody that inspires us to reach that, or bury angels. And he's doing exactly the opposite. So I think that the path forward has to be, let's protest, but also let's become engaged, let's support, let's learn about the leaders that are going to fight for our rights, who are going to fight for equality, and let's support them and go to the ballot and not only vote against the racists, because they're very obvious, vote those out who remain silent, who don't have the guts to stand up for what it's right.
Right.
You know,
the thing is, well, you know, we all watch, you know, people go to a temple, they go to a church, they go to a mosque, they go to a place of worship, and they move their lips and they say whatever needs to be said. But then the next day they're doing something completely different. I always said, you know, if you have to be your brother's keeper in thoughts, words, and action, it should be 24/7, correct? So, mm-hmm. So what's happening with our society? I mean, you and I have talked about human beings before. We talked about immigration reform and the undocumented people having to stay in the shadows because they're afraid to come out of the shadows. We've talked about all these things that are happening on Earth. What can we do as human beings to tell people that treat each other with respect and dignity and put value on life? Because we're not seeing that right now, but from so many leaders, even in Brazil, I was watching with the coronavirus, what's happening. I mean, how can we tell people that, hey, there's a pandemic and there's protests, but people are doing it all because they care about human life? What do we all have in common? You know, what can we do to help all over the world, not just here in the United States with what's going on, but even with immigration, with people who are still in the shadows?
I think this pandemic has shown that it has thrown into relief the deep inequalities that exist in our system. And we've seen that we, as a society, we function because we have people picking crops for us that bring us the vegetables that we eat. In this pandemic, we have farm workers who are dying so that we can stay at home and receive anything that we need. And if you look at people who are dying from COVID, it's a lot of people are people of color. Most people who cannot afford to stay home, who have the low-wage paying jobs that happen to be essential workers. So if there's essential work, shouldn't we treat that person as essential to our society? How can we discriminate the very same people who are keeping all of us alive through a crisis, for example? I think it's an important opportunity, this crisis, to realize how much we depend on each other, try to see that our fates are intertwined, and that we're all better off collaborating for progress, you know, to make each other's lives better. No one benefits from a single group or minority being oppressed, and everyone benefits from giving a fairer, a better chance to every single minority. So we have to fight for that equality together, and hopefully we can inspire each other to do so, and we can vote for leaders that inspire us to do so.
Yeah, because you bring up a good point, because a lot of people can sit behind a computer and work on Zoom remotely because that's what their job is. But the essential workers, the people who are putting the food on your table, the immigrants, the undocumented, people from all over the world who are working in fields, people who are packing and delivering and all that, they don't have that luxury of driving a truck or picking cucumbers or lettuce or whatever it is you have on your table remotely. And I think we should stress that point. So before we go, we have a couple of minutes left. Give us a little update on what's going on with immigration reform.
Well, you know, as long as we have Mitch McConnell and the Republicans try to, you know, kneeling down before Trump and his bigotry, very little is going to be accomplished. We need those who believe in immigration reform should fight to have not only a president that's willing to push, but also a Congress that's willing to push. Everybody, regardless of that, we can all stand side by side with our immigrant brothers and sisters, you know, helping donate to the organizations that work, donating to people who are working, you know, farm workers. And we should also stress, remind everybody, this is a country of immigrants. This is a country that was built not only by the black folk who were enslaved and brought here to work and who have been so badly treated, but also by many immigrants who have been used and abused throughout, and many of them who not only the undocumented, but those who stay at home using their computers, sometimes using them to post racist things. They're using technology that was built by an amazing, you know, immigrant entrepreneur or the son of an immigrant, you know, in the case of the big, you know, Googles and Apples and all of that.
Right.
And that's what's beautiful about this country. That's what's made it an exceptional country, is that it inspires people from all over the world, and we have the best of the best, and we have to take advantage of that and not turn our back on immigration. We have to work together, and now more than ever, we are a single planet, you know, that we depend on the same environment that we have to take care of, and we have to stop fighting with each other and becoming falling into sectarianism and tribalism and attacking each other, which is only going to hurt us all.
But we have to be human, because I think I told you before, when I filed legally for my brothers and sisters, it took me 17 years. So we do need comprehensive immigration reform and find a pathway for people who are in the shadows to come out and work and contribute and pay their taxes like everybody else and assimilate into this great country. Because people who come to this country, they're coming because it is a beacon of light and hope, and they want that opportunity. But before we go, so tell us quickly what's in store for you. What are you working on? And give us your website, because talking to you is always so enlightening for our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. So give us your website and tell us what you're working on. We just love your songs, and we follow your career here.
Thank you so much. I think last time we may have played a little bit of a song that I was working on called The Flame You Keep, which was written in support of refugees. We turned that into a video working with the United Nations Refugee Agency and with a very inspiring refugee by the name of Yusra Mardini. She's a Syrian swimmer who became an Olympian swimmer and a goodwill ambassador for the UN. So we made this video with footage from all around the world, and you know, we were sort of thinking about releasing it soon, but now because of the COVID crisis, we've delayed that a little bit. It's been selected for film festivals, where it would be premiering, we hope. And you know, that's what I do, write songs. If you want to keep up with what I do, I guess the easiest way is facebook.com/Andres and the number one. And Andres is spelled A-N-D-R-E-S and the number one. And that's sort of my personal account, but you can also follow me there. And I post there about all the songs that I'm working on and videos, which, of course, a lot of them have to do with immigrant rights, but also what's going on. I've written about protecting the environment and human rights, and also what's going on right now is inspiring a lot of songs. So hopefully in the future we'll see more.
So you would agree that we should tell people, don't sit back and watch, to get involved and vote. And how do we get more immigrants to be involved in the voting process? Because we do have a lot of people that sit back and don't vote. What would you say to someone who is listening and is not registered?
It's your rights. A lot of people complain, you know, but we're the ones to blame if we're not learning about who the best leaders for us are. And the candidates have their platforms online. And there are many organizations where you can not just vote, but also, you know, they'll help you call numbers and vote. You know, for these primaries, we went out there and campaigned, and now we can do it from the safety of our homes, I guess, or as states open safely, the ones that have followed protocol can open safely. We can look into other ways of participating, but the phone is always there, just like we're connected online, thank God for technology, and we can reach out and talk to our families. And to bring it back to the initial subject, racism is pervasive everywhere. We have to look at ourselves and everyday interaction and have the courage to call it out every time. It can be your uncle, it can be your aunt, your children, your significant other. Every time we see it, we have to speak up and point it out. And in a peaceful way, try to bring about understanding. We ourselves, for example, in my community, there's racism. It's the stupidest thing ever, but we discriminate people with darker shades in our skin.
Oh, trust me, the Indian community does too. I mean, I tell people all the time, it starts in your homes, in your churches, in your communities, in your job if you have to bring it out in the parking lot when you're leaving, just say something nice to someone. But racism is there, and it saddens me that so many of us sit back and just let it be because we don't want to get into an argument with a family member or a friend or somebody we know. But we know that they're racist and we know they're making comments that are not fair and just to other people.
Exactly. And that's where it starts. It starts at home, like everything. We have to be the example of what we want to be. Like Gandhi said, you have to embody what you want to be.
Yeah.
And we have to live up to what we want to see in society. It's up to all of us.
That's a fantastic message to all of our listeners here in Cocoa, Florida. Thank you, Andres, for tuning in and for being such a great part of our show and a longtime friend of the show. But we're going to take a quick station break and listen to our sponsors real quick, and we'll be right back with Randy Foster for Palm Bay City Council Seat 3.
Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MEDFAST Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. Ellen Little, my co-host, is here. Randy Foster, who's running for Palm Bay City Council seat 3, is here. We are also heard on FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7. What a spirited conversation with Andres Usechi.
Yes.
And Ellen.
Always. A spirited. Great insight, great perspective.
And it's nice to have people that call into our show that's not asking for money or a nonprofit sometimes. Although I love helping nonprofits and doing great things for the community, whether it's the homeless, whether it's United Way, whether we're trying to get clothes and shoes for a thrift shop. It's also nice to have someone like him, a writer, a film director. He's a graphic artist. He's a singer. He's a songwriter. And he took the time to call in from Southern California and share with us how he feels about what's happening with our country and the violence and coronavirus and immigration reform. And I think the listeners could pretty much figure out what kind of a person he is by the topics we discuss. He's a human being that cares about people and life.
Well, and he does things. He doesn't sit behind Facebook and just comment about it. He actually goes out and does things about it. He writes songs about it. He brings light, where there's darkness, if you will.
That's why I get a little concerned with people sometimes. Like, I understand folks are outraged, but there's so many that just sit behind Facebook or social media or Instagram or TikTok, whatever they call it,
right,
and they don't really do anything for anyone. It takes a lot of guts and glory to get off your comfort zone and attend a protest and be peaceful about it.
That's right.
Or try to help the homeless, or try to help somebody running for office, or understand we have friends that want to see a good environment, great public schools, good teachers, good law enforcement officers that listen to the pain and the hurt from others. And those people are people like Randy Foster.
Yes, no,
that got off of Facebook, got off of his retirement. Mm-hmm. He could be retired and just living like everybody else, fishing in a little boat somewhere with a hat. But he decided not to. But of course, talking about boat, I don't like the boat. So Randy, tell us a little bit about yourself. And you're throwing your hat back into the ring to run for city council.
Yes,
Palm Bay. District
yes, last
3.
Time it was the county commission. I was not successful, but I'm running for the Palm Bay City Council. I live in Palm Bay. I love Palm Bay. I'm a candidate for seat 3, and I don't consider myself a politician. That word's kind of not good. I consider myself a veteran. I am a veteran, but I'm a veteran with a vision. And you cannot lead if you don't have a vision. Time doesn't change anything. Leaders change things. And right now, we need a change in Palm Bay. And I'm that leader to make the change.
You're a calm leader, too. Oftentimes you have people that are running for office and they bring a lot of anxiety because everything is rush, rush, rush. And I've got to get this out. But you bring a sense of calm because you have that wisdom. You have knowledge. You have life experience. And you're bringing it all to the city council.
Yes, the life experience. I lived in quite a few cities as a U.S. Marshal, and being in the military. I'm a retired Air Force veteran, and I learned. I grew up in New York City. I seen the worst of the worst, in city government and property and bad policing. I seen that. I don't want that for the city that I came to love and live in, and want to spend my last days in. I'm all in Palm Bay, and I'm staying in Palm Bay. I want Palm Bay to be the best city in the state of Florida. And I know we can, and I know we will.
So how do we restore integrity to the Palm Bay City Council? Because those of us who subscribe to the Florida Today, of course, it is thin as this now in print and online. We've seen a lot of shenanigans went on with the city of Palm Bay officials.
Yes, yes. There was, you could go to my website and you could see voterandyfoster.com. You could read about it. Integrity is what I'm all about. You restore integrity, one, by removing the incumbent out of the office and putting me in seat 3. That's number one. Number two, my background, I've been investigated because of my background. To get hired as a U.S. Marshal, and they have top secret clearance, and top secret clearance in the military. Yes.
You're clean and clear.
Trust me, they got my fingerprints.
Yeah, you're clean.
So, but I had to live that way to be in the top levels of law enforcement in the federal government to have that secret clearance. And I lived my life that way. It's always the right time to do the right thing. And I believe in that. And that's how the way I live my life. And that's the way I'd be a city councilman.
Yeah. Isn't that wonderful that you have a leader that actually practices what he says, practice what you preach? So you say, you know, on your website, you talk about public safety. And, you know, we have a lot of families that are moving into Palm Bay. We have it's a family-oriented community place. People want parks and recreation facilities, and they want to be, most important, safe. How would you bring that to Palm Bay?
Well, you know, during this pandemic, when it first kicked off, there was a lot of Amber Alerts. I don't know if you noticed that, but I noticed that every time an Amber Alert, I guess my law enforcement instincts kicked in, and I started looking for the person that is out there. But what I mean by public safety, and you could go on my site, I went before the city council, and I warned them of COVID-19. I warned them of this pandemic, and they looked at me like I was crazy when I said, what are you doing to make sure the city workers are safe? Our police officers are safe. Our firefighters are safe. I went and spoke, and I was told to go to a website. That's not leadership. Mm-hmm. What I mean by public safety, we have technology that we could put in place in our parks and recreation centers and our parks and put it out in the community. If something happens, it's being recorded. And if you have video, as we know how powerful videos these days are, if you have video, somebody snatching a kid, someone robbing somebody, to resolve that issue is more than likely what happened. The police could respond
to that.
So
invest in technology.
Yes. We have technology is big. We live in an age of technology, the internet.
It's like the Jetsons. You remember when we all used to wake up on Saturdays and watch the Jetsons? Nobody would have believed you'd be able to talk to a grandparent on a phone.
Let me give you an example. You go into Walmart, they have technology. They have cameras in the parking lot.
And self-checkout.
Right. You go in a bank, they have cameras. I'm not saying some city has cameras spread out. We don't have that. That costs money. You could probably get a grant for that. So, and it's a lot of things that we could do for people to call in when they see something, say something. That was going on during the 9/11. If you see somebody suspicious, call in and say something. You don't hear that we talk like that anymore. If you see, and I'm just saying call the police on a black guy like they did in New York. I'm not saying that. I'm saying when you see something suspicious, like drug dealing going on next to your neighbor, or like a car circling around kids that shouldn't be there, somebody, say something.
Yeah, it could be somebody trying to steal a kid.
Right.
Human trafficking.
Right.
So what exactly is the role of a city council member when you get to seat 3 in Palm Bay?
Well, in Palm Bay, we have a council management type government. That means that we don't have a strong mayor. A mayor is the executive of the city government. But in Palm Bay, we have a council management government where the city councilman and the mayor makes policy decisions. The city manager, who runs the executive branch, the city attorney reports to the city council, the city manager reports to the city council, and the city clerk reports to the city council. So the councilman has an opportunity to
be a team member.
A team member, a board of directors for the city, and policies and vision and strategic plan to move the city forward. That's their job.
So how would you bring jobs and businesses and promote economic development in Palm Bay? And we were just talking last week about all the economic development that's going on in Palm Bay. It's growing. It's developing. People are happy about it. But yes, there are still more areas to be developed.
Palm Bay got a long way to go when it comes to economic development. I'm going to give you an example that I point out all the time. Palm Bay Road is a major road in Palm Bay.
Oh, that's Ellen's favorite road. She would like to see that road fixed up.
Right, but on both sides of the street, one side is all in the city limits. On the other side, if you're going west, is chopped up into Melbourne and West Melbourne. And if you notice, Handed Landing is a big shopping area there. That's all West Melbourne. And before you get to Handed Landing, the shops leading up to that is all in Melbourne. On the other side of the street, where the only big business is Bass Pro and the Harley Davidson, and everything else is residential.
Yeah.
So, and unless you get, when you get close to Harris. But we have to make sure that we bring business, and we competing against every city in Brevard County and every county in the state of Florida. So you have to attract, and you have to offer candy,
yeah,
or carrots to get money.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you also have to have a workforce that's willing. So you have to invest in education as well.
Yes.
In addition to jobs, and you have to build the infrastructure to attract all of
them. Well, we got Eastern Florida State College, but we need to get business to work along with the city government and the community to come in here. And I believe I could do that by reaching out to major corporations. We also got to support our small business, but we also have to get big business into the city.
You're right. And major corporations or someone who's looking to relocate would want to see good leadership before right. they say, yes, I'm coming.
Right.
And you want to look into things like the water, the sewer, the roads, information systems, and you also want to strengthen law enforcement as well.
Yes. We're in the Palm Bay Police Department is down like 8 to 12 officers. If you go south on Babcock, that area where the 95 exit is being opened, that's going to grow. They're going to have to put a police station and a fire station down there. And I talked with the chief of police, and I talked with the fire chief. That costs money, but the impact fees will pay for that once D.R. Horton start building homes and other developers. So we're going to have to hire, and they have a problem hiring to fill that 8 position, believe it or not. These young people don't want to be police officers or firefighters, and I think that's an honorable job. I did it for so long. I think it's an honorable job to have.
Yeah, I wonder why more people, I guess, wouldn't want to apply, because I know my daughter's husband, he wanted to be a cop so bad, but they moved to Orlando, mm-hmm. and but he would have jumped at an opportunity. I mean, when you're a police officer, it's a respectable job.
Yeah.
And the rewards are great because you're taking care of your community.
Yes.
You're setting an example in uniform to take care of your community. Why do you think they don't have enough applicants?
I think, one, as we see today, social media, it plays a part in it when you see bad policing. And I have a son. My son is in college. And he knows I've been in law enforcement for my whole career. And he don't want nothing to do with it. He don't want nothing to do with law enforcement. He'd rather be a computer scientist or a pharmacist, but he wanted nothing to do with the military. And I've been, his mother's
Randy,
in the military.
Randy, what did you do? Because
well,
I know my husband, my kids didn't want to go into medicine because they said, no, we don't want to be bothered with the long hours, malpractice, getting sued.
Yeah,
and I think that's something with the police too. Because I mean, you know,
ours.
You know,
Who wants to do the job of what those poor folks are doing right now that are out on the streets? I mean, that's and when that's your only like what you're seeing happening, who would want to sign up for that?
But although my dad was a police officer when we were little, and you know, he was well respected in our village because people looked up to him. He had wisdom. He had experience, and he could talk to people. He could calm situations down.
But that's leadership.
You know,
yeah,
that's leadership. We can all have that.
You know, remember we had that monk call in from Canada once. Mm-hmm. And in Canada, a lot of the police officers, they go for training and they go for spiritual counseling with these monks.
Wow.
And they learn how to have anger management. A lot of what we're seeing play out with George Floyd is angry people. I mean, we saw four officers in uniform that decided to be complicit because they didn't think that it mattered to us what they did.
But see, here's the problem. Law enforcement around the nation has a problem with recruiting. And that leads to other problems of recruiting the wrong people instead of the right people. But the millennials today are social media. They're on social media 24/7. They cannot live without social media. And when you have riots in the streets and these officers are putting their life on the line and firefighters out there risking their lives, they see that and they don't want to be a part of that. And yes. this is a serious problem for cities and counties and states across America, because we got to have law enforcement. We got to have firefighters. We got to have people joining our military.
But doesn't that come from guidance at home, from elders, the community, parents? Parents have to sit down with their children and say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And they have to be there, you know, for guidance, for support. When a child comes home from school, grandparent or someone has to be there. Of course, a lot of families don't have that. But the direction that you got in life to go into the military, or that I got to become a nurse, or other people in the community, it has to come from those who love us, those who care for us, those who give us opportunities. And it does take a village to raise our children.
Right. But you just said it. The nurses are on the front line of this COVID-19. And then you got people that goes out and disregard social distancing, just disregard what's going on. And you have nurses and doctors, are trying to take care of you, but you're going out there and just reaffecting yourself. And then you expect someone to take care of you. We have to take responsibility for ourselves. And government needs to take responsibility. This is a good example of what you've seen with what happened to George Floyd. Bad government. They allowed an officer to stay on the force who should have been fired years ago. He terrorized the community. That's why Indianapolis is on fire today. And leadership from the chief of police to the mayor allowed this to happen. And this is why, you know, leadership matters so much, especially in 2020. Coming up, my election, my primary is August 18th. Please go out and vote. Absolutely. I'm the only leader for seat 3.
Right.
And you can go to my website and you'll see that.
And by the way, this segment is paid for by Randy Foster and his campaign for Palm Bay City Council seat 3.
But you know, Ellen, one of the nice things about Randy is that Randy is also talking about the environment and the Indian River Lagoon. And your favorite place, Turkey Creek.
Yes.
So you live in Palm Bay and you've seen what's happened with the lagoon. You've been involved with all of us for years, what we're doing for the lagoon,
yes.
Donating time, energy, effort, talking about it, promoting, watching your septic tank if they're leaking, grass clippings, what to do with it, rainwater barrels. We have all been involved in this. What else can you do when you get to the city? I suppose you would be encouraging education.
Here's what happened a couple of weeks ago. I go to all the city council meetings because I think if you're running for city council, you need to be at the meeting.
a lot of people don't, and they want to run for office.
Yes. But I was at the city council meeting earlier this year, and it came up about septic tanks and hooking up to city water and city sewer. And one thing that the city is not doing, they're not following this Florida state law. Florida state law says to the city of Palm Bay, you got to hook up to city sewer when it's available. They didn't pass that. The council had a chance to pass it. A lot of people showed up and was angry in protest, and they decided not to pass what was in front of them. I went up there and I spoke. And I said, listen, yes, we allow people to have well water and septic tank. But going forward from this day on, if they are in an area where they could hook up to sewer, allow them to do that. Well, it's going to cost the residents money. Well, come up a way and be creative, and don't charge somebody $5,000 and make them pay in 24 months. Come up a way, get this money to hook up everybody you can into city sewer.
And I know it wasn't the same reason, but just like Hammock Landings, of what we talked about before, which is not in Palm Bay,
right,
they charge 25 cents for every $100 or something,
yes,
like that that people spend. And so when you shop at Hammock Landings, that any of those proprietors that are in there, you're actually getting charged that 25 cents for every $100 that you're in. I mean, that would be a great, you know, I don't know what to put it on, but that would be a great way to start getting at least some of that revenue.
Right.
I
have some ideas where you could get it. You could get it from infrastructure spending.
Absolutely.
from the federal government.
Yeah.
Because that's going to come down as soon as we get out of this.
And one question we had, I had somebody text me a question. What about affordable housing in Palm Bay? What do you think has to happen with that? Because there's so many people that a one-bedroom apartment in a decent neighborhood is almost $800.
Oh, yes.
Oh, much more than that.
Much more than that.
I mean, and a two-bedroom is over $1,200.
Yes.
So, people want to live, they want to work, they want to pay their taxes, have health care, put food on the table, but that's a big chunk of change.
Actually, you could get a mortgage cheaper than you could get rent in Palm Bay.
This is
crazy. But you have young people who are trying to make it in the city, in the county, and they can't afford to live. So one of my ideals is rent control. They do it in Orlando. Rent control is something that you could do, not for the county, but just for Palm Bay area. And that's not going to be popular with the owners, but it could slow down the high cost of rent. And then we could look at tiny homes that just passed. We could look at getting a developer in here and encourage them to build property that people could afford. And we got the state has a program, I can't remember it, where they have affordable housing. They're doing it in Melbourne, building affordable housing for people of all backgrounds and all income levels, seniors as well as young people.
And it's on a graduated scale.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Brevard Housing Authority had been doing that for a little while, but they ran out of,
yes,
they ran out. So
they always,
I wasn't
ran
sure
out of,
about that.
They ran out of steam and they ran out of money. That's what happened.
Yep,
exactly. So your election, Randy Foster, for Palm Bay City Council, seat 3, this election is decided on August 18th. And you do have a couple of people running against you, but we like your platform and we believe in you, and your leadership skills are terrific. I mean, you are a living embodiment of what you believe in. So tell our listeners, give them your website and how they could donate, how they could contribute, if somebody wants to volunteer. I know you had a lot of volunteers last time that went around with T-shirts on and knocking on doors and stuff.
Yes, my website is voterandyfoster.com. Voterandyfoster.com. And you can find out, that's a good place to start with a donation. You know, $25, $50, whatever you can, I appreciate it. A donation, you could donate on my website. And you could sign up to be a volunteer. I'm going to start handing out signs real soon. Matter of fact, this month, I'm going to start handing out signs.
And so please, they can vote by mail, too.
Yes.
And we're putting all of this on our Facebook page and also on our website. Randy, we never have enough time every time you come in. But we are ending the show, unfortunately. So, Sita, thank you so much for another fantastic edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Thank you.